the song that was played just now. Very beautiful. And the words of the song are that don't say to God that my difficulties or my problems are greater. Say to the problems, my God is greater. So it's like instead of talking to God about your problems, talk to the problems about God. And so it's a very beautiful song. Today's topic, today's theme or whatever, experience with Dari Janki. And when I heard the Murli this morning, and Baba was talking a lot about this word, introverted, that when you become introverted, then how much we're able to accomplish. And once, I remember I was sitting with Daddy, and out of the blue, I was just sitting, and she said, introversion is not a virtue. And I looked at her, I said, how can that be? Because it's on the list of 36 virtues. She goes, it's not a virtue. And I was thinking, my goodness, all these years we think introversion is a virtue, and it's not. And she goes, introversion is a method. It's not a virtue, it's a method to bring the other virtues into ourselves. So she said it's a method. And the word introverted in Hindi, it's antarmukhi. And antar means to go in, mukh means face. And so I have to realize that internally means within the soul, the intellect, there's a face. And our face has eyes, nose, smell, taste, speech, ears, everything that's there on the face, our sense organs. And so internally there's also a face which has these things. Like you see with your mind's eye, or sometimes you can smell something. It's not there really, but you can smell it inside you, or you can taste something inside you, or you're listening to something internally. And so antarmukhi, introversion, means that face is also, my inner face is also active. And then the opposite of introversion is extroversion. And in Hindi again, the word is bahar mukhi, means your face is always out there. And I remember once Daddy gave a very beautiful definition of extroversion. She goes, extroversion doesn't mean that you can't joke or you can't laugh or anything. Extroversion is when I want to be seen. That's one thing, is like you do things because you want to be seen. That's extroversion. You're doing things to show off. That is extroversion. And so these were the beautiful definitions that I kept inside of introversion and extroversion. Your inner face and then the outer face, the one that's displayed outside. Another thing I remember, a lot of what I picked up from Daddy is when I've been a bystander of her having, when she's talking to somebody or when there's an interaction happening with somebody. And I remember once, she was just standing, she was waiting for the car to come from the car park, after a program, from the car park, and one sister went up to her and approached her and said to Daddy, I hope you've forgiven me for all the wrong that I've done in the past. And I was just waiting there with Daddy, and Daddy said something very interesting. She said, I don't have the power to forgive. And I think the sister was shocked who'd asked for forgiveness. And I was also like taken aback that what's Daddy saying? She's saying, I don't have the power to forgive. And then Daddy explained to her because she was taken aback, and Daddy could see that this sister had taken up so much courage to ask for forgiveness. And Daddy's saying, I don't have that power. And Daddy says, nobody actually has the power to forgive. Because supposing I do something wrong, then I ask for forgiveness, and the other person says, I forgive you. What does that suggest then? It's like, do I have that authority to forgive somebody? And if I say, I forgive you, does that cancel out their punishment for the wrong that they've done? Do you see what Daddy was trying to say? That whatever you've done, good or bad, you will get the return of that anyway. My forgiving you or not forgiving you will not make a difference in that. When we say, I forgive you, it's okay, my heart is big, and then I say, yes, I forgive you. I want to amend the situation. I don't want that tension in the situation. So then we say, okay, I forgive you, but don't do it again. And so Daddy actually shed a different light on this whole topic of forgiveness. She gave it a totally different meaning, that we don't actually have the power to forgive. And if I say, I forgive you, it's ego. I have ego that's saying, I, means I'm putting myself higher and you're lower and I'm forgiving you. Like we may in bhakti, we say to God, God, please forgive me. And does God actually forgive? And she said that he doesn't forgive because it's not something that he needs to do. The law of karma will work anyway. If I have sown a bad seed, I will get a bad fruit. In the law of karma, God does not interfere. He stays beyond that law. And so, you want to say something? You want? Of nullifying that seed. See, often in the Murli, Baba says that if you write to Baba or you ask Baba for forgiveness, then what happens is half is reduced. If you tell the truth, half is reduced. And that happens even logically. Like supposing a child does something wrong and he tells the truth to the parents, then because of telling the truth, because of having the courage to tell the truth, the parents will say, okay, he's told the truth. And so they lessen the punishment. The intensity of the punishment is slightly decreased. And the other thing that happens in law, in worldly law, is that if you've done something wrong, a crime or whatever, you get your punishment of however many years in jail or whatever. What happens, you get released early for good behavior. And so, if I really want forgiveness, if I want to decrease the punishment or nullify it, then good behavior, transformation, Baba sees that, and then I think that the intensity of the punishment decreases. And this is where Baba says that a crucifix, something which could be a big thing, changes to something like a thorn. It becomes a small thing. And so, what I always liked about Daddy Janki is that I always felt, I still do feel, that she is the ultimate when it comes to any question of gyan, any aspect of knowledge which needs clarification. You can ask so many people the same question, but when you ask Daddy, it's like, it's final, that's the ultimate, she is the authority of knowledge. And so I remember once I asked Daddy that whatever you say, we feel it's right. It doesn't need questioning any further. And so how did you get this stage that whatever you say, it's like it's almost written in stone or it's fixed? And she's saying that she many know that she came to Baba later than the other daddies. I think it was a couple of years later she came to Baba. And so she approached Baba, that, "Baba, I've come so late to Baba. How can I catch up with those who came earlier?" You've all heard this story, no? And guess what Baba said to her? What was Baba's answer? No, he gave her a very practical answer. Exactly. That was exactly what Baba said to her. That read the Murli 24 times. That everyday Murli. And so she took that on board. Because she didn't live with Baba in the center or in the ashram. She lived with her family. And so she was in bondage. But her love for Baba was the same intensity as the others. And even though she would do service in the center, Baba wouldn't allow her to eat at the center or in the, it wasn't called a center in those days, but in the ashram. Means whatever you've done, it shouldn't be that I've eaten and finished that pure action or that. Baba would say to her, "No, you go home and you eat your food." And so she would do that. Whatever Baba said, she would do. She never felt that I'm not allowed to eat here. Initially, in the beginning, because she lived at home, no? Huh? See, because now when she goes home, she'll cook, she'll prepare for Baba, she'll eat in Baba's remembrance. So Baba made her strong from day one. He didn't treat her like he treated the others. He was much stricter with her. Yeah, so not to, yeah. And so the other day I asked Daddy, what is the purpose of Baba's hut? Like you have Baba's room, which was Baba's bedroom. It was half the size of what it is now, Baba's bedroom. So on one side you have a bed, and then on the other side you have something on the floor, that mattress on the floor. So I said, that was Baba's room. So what was the purpose of the hut? And then she told me that Baba would just meet very special souls there, very selected few. Baba would sit with them there, or he'd go just for his own introversion. And then she said to me once that there were certain souls that Baba would play cards with. You know, Brahma Baba would play cards with them, but he would never play with Daddy Janki. He said, "You can watch, but you can't play cards with me." So he treated her differently. And sometimes chocolates would come from Hong Kong, and he would distribute chocolates to those, because there were many children, and he would never give her. He'd say, "No, you don't eat chocolates. You're true Vaishnav." Means you're a very pure soul, and so he wouldn't give her chocolates. So how has Daddy Janki become Daddy Janki today? Simply because Baba treated her differently, because he saw different qualities within her, I suppose. And I remember what she was explaining, that Baba's room was such that where we put our shoes now, just outside Baba's room, before we, there used to be a bed there, and that would be the waiting area to meet Baba, before they would go in to meet Baba. So there'd be a bed, and that's where they would sit, and sometimes also have Gyan Chit Chat, like Rajubhai was explaining yesterday, that the facilities of those days were very basic. You know, just a bed would be like a bench. It was used like a sitting area. And Daddy, Baba always sent her out on service. And so her time that she spent in Madhavan was less than any of the other daddies. She was always abroad or in Pune or everything. She was more used to running a center than involved in the management of Madhavan. And so when Dadiji left the body, then naturally Daddy Janki was given that position. And many would comment that, "Well, now Daddy, you've got a new title, you've got new responsibilities, etc." But Daddy said something very interesting. She goes, if I put my head into management, then my gyan and yoga will suffer. So let those who are doing the management, because Daddy Prakash Mani actually set very good systems. And the systems she'd set were like the duties that were given to the brothers, to the Madhuban Nivasis. They were given in such a way that no Madhuban Nivasi could say, I don't have time for myself, or I'm too busy. They would always, she would give them a duty and make sure they had time for their own self-progress, for their own leisure, whatever. You will see, no Madhuban Nivasi is in such a situation where they don't have time for their own self-progress or effort or whatever else they want to do. This was always Daddy Kumarka's aim, that they should have time for themselves. And so when Daddy Janki got this position of being the administrative head of the organization, she didn't change her churnings or give less classes or whatever. She still maintained her gyan and yoga. And I remember once when she was sending me to Nigeria, then she said, let me tell you a secret formula that will help you with the success of the center. And I want you to implement this so that they, the students, also implement it in their lives as well. She goes, there are five things that you need to make sure you do every day. One, we all know, Amrit Vela. Second, Murli. Third, traffic control. Fourth, offering a bhog. Make sure you offer bhog every single day to Baba. Even though you'll be living on your own, and sometimes you think, well, you know, I'll just eat fruit, or I'll just, you know. But no. Even if you don't eat, make sure you offer something to Baba. And the fifth was evening meditation. She says, keep these five things, make them very, very pakka, very firm. Don't ever go up and down with these five, and then there will be success in the center. You won't lack for anything. So I kept these five things in my mind all the time, that these five things mustn't ever fluctuate. They must always be there. Traffic control, offering a bhog. Sometimes if I'd gone to the other center, maybe had lunch there and whatever, then I would think, well, I've had lunch, so I don't need to make anything. But even if it was 9 o'clock at night, I would make something, little bit of something for Baba. Because I've eaten elsewhere, but Baba, the one who's running the center, Baba's the one who is in charge. He hasn't eaten, so I would make something for Baba. And I found that because of these five things, my stage remained stable. It was good. Otherwise, it was so easy to come into thoughts of loneliness or there's nobody here, etc., etc. These five things kept me very happy, I would say. And the other thing I noticed with Daddy is that whatever words Baba used, she would try to use those same words. Like, for example, in the morning in London, obviously, she would read Murli. And then throughout the day, whoever would come to her, to meet her, they would come, obviously, with problems or issues or something. And I noticed, how did she respond to their problems? She would respond to their problem by telling them what Baba had said in that day's Murli. You know, this is what Baba said, this is what Baba said. So she would she would also draw their attention to the Murli. Then actually, the Murli holds answers for whatever it is you're going through. And I remember one sister telling me that Dadiji, Daddy Kumarka, when Daddy Kumarka asked the group of teachers, all the young teachers, that when you have a problem, what do? All of you are in centers, etc. Excuse me. All of you are in centers, obviously, problems come to you. And so what do you do? And many replied, they go to Baba's room. They don't have access to a daddy in their center. They go to Baba's room and tell Baba their problems. And they sit in Baba's room for hours on end. And then Dadiji said, no, don't do that. Because when you have a problem and you go and sit in Baba's room, what do you think about more? The problem. You start thinking so much about the issue, the problem, and you make it bigger in your mind by thinking about it. Whenever you have a problem, she said, what should you do? Pick up the Murli, she said. Read the Murli. Do something means reading the Murli. You've taken your mind away from the problem and you're now looking at Baba's words, listening to Baba's words, reading Baba's words. That will then give you the solutions that you require. And it was very practical. Rather than focusing on the problem, thinking about it all the time, churning the problem, you've looked now at the solution. Baba's Murli, many people say that the answer I wanted was in that day's Murli. And once, I remember asking Daddy, so what is the difference between success and victory? Because Baba talks about both of these things, that victory and success. And so she explained to me that you would never say that you when if you have a program or some function or something in the center, you would never say the program was victorious. What would you say? Success. It was a success. And so where would you use the word victory? You would use the word victory over the vices, over an enemy. And so for programs you say that yes, service was successful, but for self-progress, then this word victory is what you would use. That when you, supposing there's a test, some kind of test has happened, like one brother was telling me this morning, his father died yesterday, and I said, well, what are you doing here? You know, you should go and see your father, or go to where he died and be there for the funeral, etc. He said, no, my brother's done everything. So I was thinking, these kind of tests come, and then it's in these tests I have to see how much I pass. And so I said to Daddy once, so what is a sign that I have passed a test? How do I know? How can I give myself the certificate of fail or pass? And then Daddy's answer was, if I passed, I won't have any waste thoughts. I won't have too many thoughts. One is waste thoughts, the other is too many thoughts. But there will be absolutely, the sign of passing is no thoughts. You know, it's interesting that in the world, when you do exams, etc., then it's like, if you're confident, you just go ahead and do whatever it is. But if you're not confident, if you're not sure, if you haven't studied well, then it's like you're worrying. But if sign of passing is absolutely no thoughts about the situation. So like supposing... Yeah, that's what Dadiji said. Dadi Kumarka gave this answer. She was meeting a group, it was about 800 center sisters, all little center sisters, the younger ones. And so she was, because supposing you have a problem with your senior, you have a problem with anything. She goes, where do you go? Because you don't come to me. You know, they're in their centers, where do all of you young Kumaris go? And most of them said, we go to Baba's room. And then you have a problem, you sit in Baba's room, what do? You think about the problem, don't you? And so she said, no, pick up a Murli, any Murli, and read it, rather than thinking about your issue. You want to say something, Eddie?
Just following on what
Yeah. See, Amrit Vela we do anyway, and we put the problem in front of Baba. But it's like sometimes something is happening ongoing, any ongoing issues you have, where you're not able to see a solution. Like, for example, if you don't get on with a particular soul, then you go and sit in Baba's room. What will you do in Baba's room? You'll tell Baba, this one did this, this happened, this defect, this is their defect, this is their issue. You know, why are they being like this to me? What have I done wrong? This is the kind of thoughts you'll have. And you might think they're not negative thoughts, but they would come under the category of waste thoughts. So rather than thinking all of those thoughts, it's better we pick up a murli. And I've tried this. If you try it, you'll see. Because when daddies give advice, that advice has to work. Otherwise, you wouldn't go back to them. You wouldn't trust them. Like, if I've gone to daddy, like Daddy Janki often says, that some people come to me, they come for advice, but they have no intention of following that advice. So it doesn't work for them. What they'll do is like they come to daddy, like some, you know, when you have a medical illness, what do we do? Like something I done recently is that, okay, this doctor said that this illness is not there. Another doctor said the illness is there. So what do? You go for a second opinion. You go for a third opinion. And often that's how people, when they don't have that faith that this is the ultimate, then they'll go to other people for advice. What's your opinion? What's your opinion? And when I do this, I've actually, the advice they've given, I'm not taking it on board. So what's going to happen is it won't work for me. You know, like Daddy said yesterday to me, I said I'm going up to Pandavan. I was in Shantivan. She goes, don't go. And I was thinking, I just sat down because she said, don't go. I immediately sat down. But I didn't have any clothing with me. I didn't, you know, but she said, stay. At 6 o'clock, she said, stay. And I thought, okay. 9 o'clock, there was a car that was going up. She goes, now you can go up. So, but in that 3 hours, it was beautiful because I spent time, we did meditation, she gave a short class, etc. So when you say, I could have said, Daddy, I don't have clothes, I don't have transport, I don't have this. I could have said, I could have argued that I can't stay. But no. And when you do what she says, the benefits are multiple. It's like you feel that you're going to gain something simply by doing what she says. Why? Because the position she has now is what? The position is she's the administrative head of the yajna. What was Baba? What was Brahma Baba? He was also the head of the yajna. And so she has Baba's position. So whatever's going to emerge from her mouth is going to be equal to Baba. Yesterday I asked her the question because Rajubhai had given a class in the morning. So I said, Rajubhai spoke about Brijendra Dadi, he spoke about Didi, he spoke about Dadi Prakashmani, and he spoke about Brahma Baba also. Yesterday, in detail, he shared the story of the day when Brahma Baba left the body, and I didn't know that he hadn't spoken, Baba hadn't spoken murli that morning. I think many of you also here did not know the story that Rajubhai shared yesterday. And I said that from what we understood, all of these souls, they left their body, they become karmatit. Because Nariji obviously should become karmatit, Baba obviously he'd become, Didi obviously should become. So then I asked her, what is the meaning of karmatit? You know, all of these souls left their body, different stages they all had when they left their body. And so is the meaning of karmatit, is it something the same for everyone, or is there a difference for everyone's becoming karmatit? And so she explained that karmatit means to be free from bondages, but also to be free from any type of attraction. She said, for example, she has pain here in her upper chest. She goes, there's pain here. And the pain has the power to attract towards itself. It pulls, you know, any physical pain in your body, you're attracted to it. You'll try and find a solution. You tell somebody, oh, I've got pain here. So you're always pulled towards that pain, or you're pulled to somebody who's very yogi, or you're pulled to, you're impressed by something. She said, karma teet means that I'm beyond, you're free from bondages and any type of attraction. And within attraction, to be impressed also is a form of attraction. Because when you're attracted to something, why are you attracted? You're impressed. Huh? And so I remember Daddy, she'd explained to us in London when she was there last time, karma deet is only possible on this field of karma. In this world, we have the power to become karma deet. It's not that I can become karma deet in the subtle region or in the soul world. It's only when I'm doing karma that I become karma deet. So karma deet is the first stage, right? Then the stage above karma deet is avyakt. When I'm, avyakt is a Hindi word. Vyakt means person, like you would say this vyakti, gross, like physical. Avyakt is when you go beyond the physical, that person, then you become avyakt. Sometimes we translate it as angelic. But she said it doesn't mean angelic. Angelic is a higher stage than avyakt. So, first is karmatit, then avyakt, and then the third stage, the higher stage, is incorporeal. I think Charuben might be remembering when she described these three. You were there when she was describing to us that how these three stages work. And so if you think about it, if you have the image of the three worlds, then karma, physical world, avyakt is subtle world, and incorporeal is the soul world. So when I have these three stages, then only I can do the work of an angel. And how do I do the work of an angel? It's like nowadays what you have what's called remote control. Yeah? And so even from a distance, like Daddy might be sitting in Madhavan and somebody might write to her that they have a problem in America. Right? Because of her stage, she's able to help that individual remotely from a distance. Do you see what I'm trying to say? That just a thought, not lots of thoughts, you know, not, she doesn't have this kind of, Baba, help that soul, please. There's no begging in that. Sometimes when we see somebody who needs help or they're going through something, we say, Baba, please help that soul, please take care of that soul. It's like almost as if we're telling Baba what to do. Baba knows already. And why should we be telling Baba what to do? But her stage is such that just with her thoughts, she's able to give sakash to that soul. And often, I think many foreigners, they don't know the meaning of sakash. Because prakash is light. Prakash means, like Dadiji was called, prakashmani, the jewel of light. Sakash is totally different. And there's three examples which I use to describe sakash. And sakash, I would translate it as not light, but as warmth and comfort. Like, for example, I'll give three examples and you'll understand what I mean by warmth and comfort. It's like a chicken or an animal, when it has its little ones, then what does it do? It covers them with its wings. Yeah, like a chicken will cover its little chicks with its wings. So it's not light, but it's sakash. That protection. So warmth, comfort, protection. So the chicken is giving sakash to her little ones. Or you could describe it as like, supposing when you're cold, it's very cold and you come and there's a fire. What do? You put your hands like this, no? To get the warmth from the fire. And then you go like this. So what you're feeling, the light from the fire is different, but the warmth is a sakash. And another example would be like, supposing, like for example, we're here in Madhuban, and obviously we don't see Daddy every day. But we don't have any work with her either. We don't have any issue to discuss with her. We don't have any problem to tell her. We don't have anything to give her. We've given her what we wanted to give. So there's no work with her. There's no interaction. But at the back of your mind, that there's this feeling that yes, she's there. She's there. Like once I remember the room I was sleeping in and Daddy's room, I could hear her coughing in the night. And then she said to me the next day that my cough must have disturbed you. I said, no, your cough never disturbs me. She said, how come? I said, I enjoy your cough because at least I know you're alive. You're okay. That she's there. So Saka, she's like, that person is there. Like within a family, you have somebody who's elder or senior. They're there. And it's like Baba says, there's one picture of Baba, and the words are written at the bottom, that don't worry, I'm there for you. So that is sakash, that comfort of knowing that person is there for you. You don't have any work with them, but they're there just in case something comes up. They will take care of it. And so sakash is what the seniors are able to give. Prakash is Baba's light, obviously. But sakash, when Baba says, Baba sends sakash, it means that warmth, that comfort, that protection is there for us. And this is what we feel. Not necessarily we always feel light from Baba, but you that comfort of knowing Baba is there for me. So one thing that I remembered was this scene of when somebody asked Daddy for forgiveness. And I really felt for that person who was asking for forgiveness. And I thought, my goodness, because they were quite shocked as well. But then afterwards that person was saying to me, did you hear what Daddy said? I said, yes, I was quite taken aback as well. The answer Daddy says, I don't have the power to forgive. And she was saying that Daddy had said, it's ego to ever say that I forgive you. And afterwards when I thought about this so much, I realized how true it is. Because this scene happened, and then a little while later, in France I had to give a talk, and the topic was forgive and forget. And so then, obviously I gave the talk and whatever. And then, at the end of the talk, there was one sister, public program, and there was one sister, she was sitting at the front. And she challenged me. She said, I was raped 5 years ago. You really expect me to forgive that person? Do you really expect me to do that? And there was obviously, the whole audience was listening. And I said, okay, don't forgive them. When I don't forgive somebody for what they've done to me, who suffers more? You or that person? The person who's done that act, do you think they even remember what they've done? If they can do such an act, do you think they care? Whether you're suffering or not, or whether you forgive them or not? Do they care if you forgive them? Does it bother them? It doesn't. That person doesn't care. They're not bothered. And here I am saying, I can't forgive you. I won't forgive you. The person doesn't care. They've forgotten it. They've maybe, okay, might have been caught, put in jail. But they're not repenting. They're not regretting what they've done. But who is suffering? You. Because what's happening every day of your, like she said, every day of her life, that scene, that situation keeps playing in her mind. And that scene is like there in every action she does. She remembers it. I said, you're the one who's suffering, not the other person. So don't forgive them. So on one side, that is saying that, yes, I don't have the power to forgive. But then on the other side, if I don't forgive, who's suffering? I'm going to suffer. So when I say, I forgive you, is it for that person or is it for myself? It's for myself. And the proof of having forgiven that, he said, is what? The proof that I have really forgiven somebody, she said the words. What's the words associated with forgive? Forget. If I have forgiven, then I will forget what happened. But if I haven't forgiven, I will remember what they have done to me again and again. I will remember the sorrow that they have given to me all the time. And today, I think we see a very loving daddy. And those of you who knew daddy 20, 30 years ago felt differently at that time. Because at that time, daddy was very strict, believe it or not. Like Rajivai was saying yesterday about Didi, that she was like the law and everybody was scared to go in front of her, and how they went round to all the rooms to check who was sleeping at Amrit Villa. Daddy Janki was equally strict. Not everybody would have been able to handle Daddy Janki. That means they wouldn't have been able to take the gyan or the teachings that she gave at that time. And I remember one person saying to Daddy Janki, because I was translating, and they said to Daddy, I wish I had met Brahma Baba. Do you know what Daddy said? She's saying, it's good you did not meet Brahma Baba. And I looked at Daddy and I'm thinking, why is Daddy saying these words? That it's good you never met Brahma Baba. And then she said, Brahma Baba was very strict. You wouldn't even have been in Gyan today, because Baba was that strict when it came. Yes, he was humorous. Yes, he was loving. Yes, he was kind. Yes, he was everything. But we hear very few stories about actually how strict, also how lawful Baba was. And she's saying, you wouldn't have been able to take it at that time. So it's good you didn't meet Baba. And now you only see the Nadi's love, etc., which keeps you going. I remember another situation. I was with Nadi in Peru. And again, I was just sitting in the car with her. We were waiting for the driver. And what I realized was Nadi, she's always thinking about Baba. Always Baba. Everything was Baba. And she turned around and she said to me, did you ever think that your father was God? Or, and then she turned around, that same sentence, that, so one is, your father is God. And then she turned around and said, that God is your father also. So she was always playing, and she was always intoxicated. Like you could feel, it was a very tangible thing, that she's intoxicated, that God, the highest, is actually her father. It's like she, almost like, you know, when you have a father, your father's a prime minister, and that intoxication is there. Well, my father's a prime minister, I can, you know, do anything I want, I have contacts, etc. So it's like she had that intoxication, that my father is God. Almost like as if she's talking about her physical father. And that intoxication keeps her going. And her courage, I feel that she has a lot of courage, like she was sharing in the class. She was giving class in Shantivan a couple of days ago. And she was like, not comparing, but she was saying, look at Ratan Mohini Dadi. Ratan Mohini Dadi reads Murli every day. She does so much service, etc., etc. She goes, I don't read Murli every day. She used to, but obviously now her health, she doesn't. She goes, I don't read Murali every day. But she goes, one thing I do, I do Amrit Vela, and I read the Murali afterwards. She goes, well, one principle that I don't let go of is evening meditation. Means she places evening meditation that much importance as the same as morning Amrit Vela meditation. She'll always say, 7 o'clock, I want to do meditation. She doesn't take any appointments or sit with anybody. Even if she's sitting with somebody and they're discussing something, she'll say to them, it's 7 o'clock. She'll cut them, she'll stop them and say, it's 7 o'clock, it's time for meditation. And I really enjoy that she doesn't matter what's happening around her. She won't compromise on these 5 things that I spoke about earlier. She won't compromise and change the timing. Like I remember one situation when we were in Canada and 2 sisters in the center. And so they were like, one sister was saying that the right time to get up is 3:30 and the other sister got up at 10 to 4, 4:15. And so it's like a little tussle or a little argument between them. And so the sister that said 3:30, she said to Daddy, this sister gets up at 10 to 4. And it's Baba Srimad to get up at 3:30. And that sister said, it's not Baba Srimad to get up at 3:30. But, you know, this, she's always insisting I get up at 3:30. So it sounds very petty now. But at that time, Lali then gave the answer. She goes, it doesn't matter what time you get up. You have to be in Baba's room by 4 a.m. Yeah. That is your own individual effort. But then, because these 2 sisters had come to Daddy with a little issue, Daddy says, doesn't matter what time you get up, you need to be in Baba's room by 4 a.m. That should be there. That it shouldn't be that you think, okay, I'll be there by 10 past 4 or 20 past 4, or, you know, if I get up at 4 o'clock and sit at 10 past, it's okay. I said, no. Whatever you do between yourselves, it's up to you. But 4 o'clock, you should be in Baba's room. And so many situations, just being with Daddy, you learn that how she handles differences of opinion or differences between 2 souls. Because she has to keep both of them happy. And yesterday, something very beautiful she said about contentment. Is a contented soul will never lack for anything. A soul that remains contented, they won't lack for anything. And a few days ago, I remember she was saying, because whatever she says, if you think about it deeply, then it feels very beautiful. The words she says, very beautiful. And so she was saying, the one who follows Srimad completely, you'll see they're always happy. They will never be unhappy because they're following Srimad. And then when you think about it, yes, and you look at souls who are happy, why are they happy? Because they're following Srimad. And so that this gives them a happiness that stays with them, an internal, deep happiness, simply because they're following Srimad. So obviously, many stories are there about Daddy. I remember when I first came to the center, and she used to say to me, Indu becomes sweet. Indu becomes sweet. And I used to think, I'm not bitter. I'm not harsh, I don't know why she keeps saying this to me, that become sweet. And so many times, like often every few months, I would hear this from Daddy, be sweet. And one day I said to her, Daddy, I'm not bitter. And you know what she said to me? She goes, you're not bitter, you're very dry. She goes, you're not, tikka means sharp. You know, you're not sharp, you're not bitter, you don't get angry, but you're very dry sometimes. You don't give a response where it's necessary. your fika, you know, this like, and so then I understood the difference between being dry and being sweet. And so this is one thing I've always kept, that I have to be sweet. And then these five things that she shared, she said, not until somebody has understood that it's through Amrit Vela and Murli that progress can happen, then there's no progress. You know, these two things are actually where our progress lies. If I give my full attention to these two things, then I will never have any obstacles in my life. So one is, she was then describing the difference between vigan, vinashak, means to be a destroyer of obstacles, and the other is to be nirvigan, means where there are no obstacles. To be a destroyer of obstacles means obstacles are coming in my life, and I'm having to give energy to destroy them. Nirvigan vinashak. And the other is nirvigan, where your path is without obstacles. So she says the stage we need to reach is of being nirvigan, where there's no obstruction, no obstacle in my path. Om Shanti. See, vigan vinashik means there's an obstacle and you have to vinash it, you have to destroy it, you have to get rid of it. There are many methods that how you destroy it. It's up to you whichever method you choose, whether you want to. So like supposing this table is an obstacle in my life, right? So you can go around it, you can go over it, you can go under it, you can break it. It's up to you which method you use. Yeah? And so that's one stage where you're destroying, your energy is going in destroying the obstacle. Right? But the other higher stage is where there's no obstacle. And if there's an obstacle, just walk around it. You don't focus on that obstacle. Why has this obstacle come? You know, it's not fair. How come other people don't have this obstacle? You know, these kind of questions often come, that only obstacles come to me, nobody else, etc. So vigan vinashik and destroyer of obstacles. Vigan vinashik, that's one thing, destroyer of obstacles. And the other is no obstacles. Nirvigan. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One thing I remember Dadi saying, what she used to say to Baba is, what Baba says is, when you become karmatit, you can't stay in this body. Yeah, you leave the body. That karmatit stage, and that's it. You leave the body. And so she said to Baba that when I become karmatit, why should I leave the body immediately? I want to experience that karmatit stage. When you've left the body, you can't experience it. And so this is what I feel, that her challenge to Baba was, or her, what she said to Baba, is that I want to experience what it's like to be karmatit. And so she's able, you see now, it's like she's experiencing karmatit. And so a few days ago I asked her the question, Daddy, what does it feel like to be karmatit? And so, and what I wanted to say was that, you know, what does it taste like? What does it feel like? What does it look like, karmatit? And she went quiet for a minute or two and she says, I can definitely say I am vikarmajit. Means I have conquered sinful action. There's no sinful thought, there's no sinful action whatsoever. I am vikarmajit, karmatit. Then she said to me, what do you feel when you see me? I said, Daddy, I feel you're very far, you're very beyond, very above everything. It's very like, sometimes we can't reach you. It's like, we can see you, but it's like, we're not able to touch you, that kind of thing. I'm not able to access you, I'm not able to get. And so she goes, yes, you're very beyond, very upram. Upram is like completely beyond. She goes, that's what karmatit is. You feel completely beyond everything. Nothing touches you. Nothing affects you. That's what. You know, it's like I said to that, it's like you feel as if, like you, I feel as if you're very far away. You're in front of us, but you're very far away. Forgiving, then in order to forgive, I have to let go of whatever I feel that they've done to me. Yeah? I have to let go. And whatever they've done, often I hold on to that as protection because I feel I might get hurt again. So the saying, no, once bitten, twice shy, etc. So there's always a feeling that I'll get hurt again, or I've been hurt, I don't want to be hurt again, so I won't forgive them. So you hold on to that. Whatever they've done, you use that as your own protection because the fear of being hurt. Because I've been hurt, that's why I'm not able to forgive. And I use that hurt to keep people at a distance. That I want my own space, I want to be protected, I want to remain protected, I don't want you to interfere in my life. Whatever reason, but I use that to keep people distant. If I say I forgive you, then it's like I'm opening myself and I become vulnerable. Yeah? So that's why we're not able to forgive. You need a very big heart to forgive, not to have fear of being hurt again, that this situation could happen to me again if I say I forgive you. I remember once what happened is that one sister was complaining to Daddy about another sister. She'd done this, she'd like this, she'd done... And whatever she'd done, it was absolutely right. So they were telling Daddy, not even complaining, but they were telling Daddy, A, B, C, D, all of these things. And the thing is, Daddy couldn't deny it because that sister had done all of these things. And now, so Daddy has to not speak bad of that sister, but she has to help the soul who's complaining, who's giving the list to Daddy, this is what's happened. And so Daddy said something very interesting to the one who was complaining. She said, yes, I agree, I know. So she wasn't denying it. She wasn't saying that you're talking rubbish. She wasn't saying you shouldn't say these things. She was saying, yes, I know, but the more you think about that person, you're actually creating karma with that person. So it's like, because obviously that sister was very upset. And so she was thinking about all the things that this individual had done. And so then Nadi said to her, you're creating karma. And that was like, for her, it's like, I don't want to create karma. None of us want to create more karma with anybody, do we? And so it's like, she was able to put a full stop simply because she didn't want to create karma with the other individual. Daddy has to deal with very delicate situations. I remember when somebody else was complaining to Daddy about BKs are like this, BKs are like this, da, 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 whole list. And Daddy put a stop to it. She goes, who are you talking about? You're talking about Baba's children. I don't see anything wrong in them. They're very good. Everybody's very good. Why are you complaining about everybody? Why are you seeing only defects? Look at yourself first. So, it means it depends on different people in different situations. That is answer. She won't allow that they complain about somebody. She doesn't like it. She says, for me, they are Baba's children also. I only see good in others. Om Shanti.